We've got the event to talk about, the second Apple fall event. This is the iPad Pro and Mac event. It felt like it came and went fast. Like, it wasn't so long ago. We were trying to guess when it would be, and now here it is.
Yeah, definitely snuck up on us a bit.
Yeah. So we are recording this episode on, is it Wednesday? It's Wednesday morning?
Yeah, it is Wednesday, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's 7 a.m., so, which is not early for me. It's just, like, the chain of events makes it feel, you know, like I'm a little bit out of the loop here, but, and for you, it's around noon, so a little bit different to our usual afternoon-evening recording session, but with Halloween and trick-or-treating, I didn't want to miss any of that, so I wanted to not delay the episode, and here we are. So, in our typical fashion, let's go through kind of the sequence of the event and see what we think about it. So, I'll let you kick it off.
Yeah, so the event started with a little video of all those little Apple logos, because obviously we saw all the custom logos in the invitations, and then they even had animated ones for the intro. And I was like all hyped up, but then the custom logos never came back again, so... It was a bit like of a disparate thing. It was like, here's all our cool little pretty logos, and then it didn't really follow through at all. So I was a bit disappointed about that. It was just kind of like the intro, and then they gave up on it. So I didn't really get that. The slides were all right, but it wasn't like the March event where they had the like Apple Pencil like doing all the way through. They were relatively straightforward, and then they went into like a little I Love New York video, which was just pictures of people in New York having fun. The event was hosted in New York. There wasn't really a specific theme, although the musical guest they had at the end, Lana Del Rey, comes from New York, so that's how they kind of tied it together in the end. And then Tim comes out. He says hello. There's, I think, the loudest roar of the crowd that I've heard at an Apple event for as long as I can remember. The crowd was very amped up from what I could tell. And I think most of that was like Apple Store employees that were just like literally whooping. Tim has to say thank you like 20 times before they show up. It was kind of annoying.
Just from the intro. So like presentation wise, it was 10 a.m. Eastern time instead of 10 a.m. Pacific time. So it was a different time of the day. And again, it was like earlier in the morning. For me, that was like 9 a.m. wasn't so bad, but it was just different from like the usual, for me, noon start time. And the last event I watched on my TV in the living room, like with my Mac set up around it. And this time my family was home. And so I watched on my iPad in my office and then like worked from my MacBook. So it was a little bit like less theatric in that regard. But I just found like the intro video, like both the Apple animations and the I Love New York video to be like unremarkable. Like it was pretty and it was like, you know, celebrating New York, but it wasn't like, let's have a discussion about it. You loved it or hated it. It was just like it happened. And I think for like every now and then, that's probably okay, because so often these events like have these like either cheesy videos or like funny videos that people either love or hate. And I feel like this one was like, you probably didn't feel strongly one way or other about the way that the event started. There was no tweet tie-in to a tweet fail or anything like that. Nothing like overly produced and comical. It was just, you know, standard some Apple logos. That's as for the theme of the event invitation. And then we are in New York. So that was it.
Yeah, like the it was very clearly like two separate videos queued up to play one after another. It was like, here's the Apple logos animating around. And now here's a video about New York. Like it was a bit of a weird intro, but it was fine. The overall theme of quality of the presentation was good, actually. There were very few hiccups in the speech and stuff, and they had a lot of new faces, and they did pretty well as well. So that was pretty good. The crowd did get on my nerves a bit, though. Like I don't know exactly why, but whoever they'd invited to provide the clapping and the cheering were very, very amped up.
Live studio audience, yeah. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're crankier than me in that regard. But
it was fine, but it got... And then especially when they had the retail segment, which when Arendz came out in like the middle of it, it was, you know, it was pretty over the top.
But well, I think that's very telling of who the audience was, like filling in all those seats for the you know, where Bloomberg didn't get invited this time because of the big hack story.
Yeah, they must have invited like 400 Apple store employees along, because they were definitely excitable. But it was fine. And they then jumped in and they started with the Mac. Uncharacteristically, Cook spent a long time like introing the segment. He kind of reviewed some features of Mojave. He showed a video of people that are like, it was kind of like a continuation of their Behind the Mac campaign with people actually using, you know, Macs for work with the black and white imagery and stuff. The one thing that was kind of stood out to me about that video was most of the laptops they showed them using were like old models, because yeah, you could tell from the keyboard, they all had like the inverted T arrow keys. So it was like, oh dear, that's the old keyboard. So they were like 2015 and earlier machines.
A lot of the shots were in the dark and you could only tell it was a MacBook from the glowing Apple logo. And it was like, for a brief moment, I thought, are they going to restore that glowing Apple logo at this event, like on this new, you know, rumored 13-inch machine? Alas, they did not. But yeah, I didn't pick up on it immediately, like in the video, and maybe it was just like, you know, also multitasking to like cover the event too. But I guess that third video was, which it was like pretty video heavy at the very beginning of the event before they got into like some fast paced presentations. Some of it was like 3x speed. But the video, like the third video, I think that was all focused around musicians, like using the Mac in music production. Like Bono was in there, which I did not notice. And I think it was all musicians like using the Mac. And in that case, like if you follow like behind the scenes music production, music producers and artists, like they don't care about technology. They care about like the creative process and like what comes out of it. It's none of it is like for the sake of technology. And you see so much old technology like in that environment, like, not even like Thunderbolt displays, but like Apple Cinema displays and like probably cheese grater Mac Pros like in the background. That from what I've seen, just like observing behind the scenes stuff that like artists share, that world is like loaded with old technology because it's all you need, I guess, you know, is
it's more industrial, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah. So, and you don't want to break your workflow. So
yeah, it's very disruptive. Like, yeah. And then I think it was interesting. They made a big deal that the Mac now has 100 million install base.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a lot. Like, that's quite a lot of active devices for the Mac line.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it pales in comparison to the iOS devices, but still, that's a very sizable market. And they're obviously, they said like more than half of people buying Macs are still new to the platform and stuff. So I don't think they're going to give up on the Mac anytime soon. Like, and clearly they wanted to reinforce that message by having it be the first thing, having Tim talk about it a lot at the beginning. Like, I think he kind of brands himself as like the iPad man, even though I think it's pretty clear that he uses Macs plenty as well. So they just kind of wanted to show that with this marketing. And what was really funny is then as he starts to like actually get to the first product, they showed a slide that had like every Mac on the screen, and like the Mac Mini's back on the slide again. It's like, oh, here we go. They had like all the Macs from the MacBook and the MacBook Air and the Mac Mini, and then they had the iMac like behind it, but it was the space gray iMac Pro, not the normal run-of-the-mill iMac. And what happened? They didn't update the normal iMacs. It's like every the products that suddenly come into prominence are the ones that they actually have stuff to talk about. But yeah, it was funny to see that Mac Mini just pop up on the slide after it being ignored for so long.
Yep. It was like, whoever's ready with a Mac Mini for us that we planned out, be ready because it's on sunscreen for some reason.
Yeah, and then he started the spiel on the first product announcement, which was the new MacBook Air. And what do we all want in a MacBook Air? A Retina display.
Yeah, he referenced Steve. Like, he didn't say Steve Jobs, he just says Steve, and it isn't like in the Steve Jobs theater. It's like, you know, this New York venue. And he references like the pulling it out of the envelope, like and not in like a video, but like on a slide of like the MacBook like creeping out of the vanilla envelope. So,
which is kind of like changing history, because the MacBook Air that he pulls out of the envelope is not the 2010 MacBook Air. The 2008 was the one he pulled out of the envelope.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, I think it was like referenced like to the first MacBook Air. Like,
yeah, but he was like, because he mentioned, and Steve, as soon as Steve pulled it out of the envelope, it changed the course of laptop computing forever. Yeah. And it's like, well, no, the 2008 one was really expensive. That was the one that started like $1,700, and then it got really hot, and it had all these problems. It had like the little drawer that you pulled down to find the ports. Like,
had a spinning hard drive.
Yeah, see, exactly. And they did have an SSD option, but it was like really expensive
and really small.
Yeah. It was the 2010 revision that everyone, you know, recognizes now as the Air and became so iconic and changed it. But it's like, as soon as Steve pulled it out of the envelope, everything changed. Like, no, there was a misstep on the first one.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I was younger then. We all were.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't around in the 2008 era.
Yeah, I just remember. So I was graduating high school and going to college around that era, and so I was in the market for a new computer, specifically a MacBook. And I remember that, and also I sold consumer electronics, you know, with my first job at Sears. And so netbooks were like huge. It was like, this is what people want. They're low cost laptops with like zero specs, like flash storage, you know, a very small amount. And it felt like the MacBook Air was like Apple's answer to it, like a netbook, which was like hyper cheap and like cheap specs, cheap material, everything. And like the MacBook Air was like, we can do that, but in like a grown-up machine, like a serious machine, still be portable, but like actually something that you want to use. And like netbooks have super died. Like, I don't think that term is used by anybody anymore. If anything, like iPads and tablets try to take that space, and then like big phones. But it's just funny that like that's how I remember the MacBook Air. I was like, this is Apple's answer to that. Not necessarily that people want a more portable MacBook Pro, but that like people want something that's the other end of the spectrum from like, you know, powerful and heavy. And then that whole world kind of died out. But like here, the MacBook Air still continues, and it definitely influenced like the next MacBook Pro. And then eventually the 12-inch MacBook. Yeah.
Yeah. And the 12-inch, what this new MacBook Air really is kind of like a mesh of the 12-inch and the entry-level MacBook Pro. Like, it's, they call it a MacBook Air, but it has a lot of the specifications of the 12-inch.
Oh, I'm super, like, I'm uncomfortable with calling it a MacBook Air, especially now that the MacBook is still called the MacBook. Like, they haven't changed that either. I'd be more comfortable if they, like, revise history and called the 12-inch MacBook also the MacBook Air. It was 12-inch and 13-inch, but they didn't. And I feel like they kind of, like, explained why they called this MacBook Air, even though to me it really isn't. They said like MacBook Air is our most beloved or something like that. It was like echoing the iPhone SE, like, you know, how they call that the most beloved form factor or something like that. I don't know. But it was like people love the MacBook Air, and then they show the MacBook Air like with USB-A ports times two, Thunderbolt 3, SD card slot, MagSafe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the reliable keyboard. And then it's like, you know, and the problem with it is that it's not Retina. So now we're going to do Retina on the MacBook Air. Okay. So it's still the MacBook Air, like as it was before, and like maybe with some new specs. Well, not really. Like what they showed is a mix. It's very clearly a mix between the 12-inch MacBook and the 13-inch MacBook Pro without touch bar. Like it's right in the middle in terms of like this overall size of it. The wedge shape was like borrowed from the 12-inch. The ports are like borrowed from the non-touch bar Pro. It's like, it's not really a MacBook Air any more than the 12-inch and 13-inch non-touch bar Pro were. But
yeah, and they haven't replaced the Air, because the old style is still on sale for the same price. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like a marketing trick. Like, we've finally done it. We've made the brand new MacBook Air, but not really. We're just calling it an Air, and then the one that everyone was complaining about is still available for the exact same price. And this one has basically the same kind of trade-offs as the non-touch bar MacBook Pro entry level and the 12-inch. But now you're going to like it because it's the MacBook Air that everyone loves. Like, there's a lot of marketing swizz this name.
I'm kind of warming up to it in that, like, the problem for me is if you've only ever used a MacBook Air in the last 10 years because you love that form factor and like what it offers, will you be happy with a MacBook Air 2018 model? Like, does that feel like an actual replacement? It's the same name, but like, is it the new thing? And it's definitely like the same as going from a 2012 MacBook Pro to a 2016 MacBook Pro, like in terms of like the trade-offs that you get for, you know, what it is. But it isn't like they went super thinner with this. I mean, I think it's lighter because it's a smaller footprint. But it isn't like dramatic in that like the first Air was. So I'm kind of warming up to it because there has not been a 13-inch wedge notebook with modern specs yet, so it is new in that regard. But it's definitely not like, you know, what people loved and like why they still bought the MacBook Air. You know,
and if you hadn't seen the presentation and I just showed you a picture of what it looked like, mm-hmm. I think the natural name you'd call it is like a 13-inch MacBook.
Yeah, if you know like the current lineup and like how Apple names their products, exactly.
That's where it would slide in, but because critically, and they had a brand new person that we haven't seen before on stage called Laura Grove, a VP Hardware Engineering. Mm-hmm. She was pretty good. She fumbled the clicker a couple of times as some of the slides flew past, but in general, first time out, much better than what Craig Federighi did with the Lion presentation. They have newer processors, but they're the 5-watt class, so they're the same generation as the fanless MacBook is.
But it has a fan, right?
I think it does. Yeah, I think it has a small
fan. They would
have
pulled it out if they didn't, I would think.
Yeah, I haven't actually checked, but I'm pretty sure it still has some fan somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they didn't call it fanless. But it does have a Retina display. They have smaller bezels, and the bezels that are there are now the black glass, so it doesn't look, you know, from 2005. Mm-hmm. So the top of it looks manual, and the top of it looks modern, and don't worry, in that space at the top, they made sure to put the FaceTime camera at the top of the display, which is exactly where you want it.
That was the quirkiest part of the presentation, yeah.
That was a very weird line.
It's like, oh, we don't have to make it pop out or put it on the bottom right corner or anything like that. It's like, okay, cool.
It's like, you've still got the same bezel at the top of the screen, but don't worry, we can still put the same camera in it. It's a FaceTime HD camera, so you do get a HD resolution, unlike the 12-inch, which is 480p.
As in 720p versus 480p, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They said they quadruple the pixels, which is not true, because the old one was 1400 by 900. So if you actually quadrupled, it would be 2800 by 1600. And the actual resolution of the screen is the same as the 13-inch non-touch bar, which is 2560 by 1600. So they didn't actually quadruple the pixels, but they got close to it. Like, it's the same screen as the 13-inch. Well, actually, that's not true. It's the same resolution as the 13-inch non-touch bar, but it doesn't have the it doesn't have the same color gamut, so okay. It doesn't have P3.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a fair difference between Air and Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the same kind of remit, right?
Yeah.
It gets Touch ID on the power button, mm-hmm. and the rest of the function keys stay the same. A lot of this was rumored, but that was nice to see. I think they should roll out a Magic Keyboard revision that has Touch ID in the keyboard for like desktop computers, if they're not going to do anything else there.
Yeah, it's curious, like, you know, about that, like, can they handle that wirelessly? But I guess with the closest thing I can think of is like the Apple Watch auto unlock feature, where they use wrist detection to authenticate that you're wearing your watch and you've entered your passcode and not removed it since then, to then signal to the Mac to say, yes, it's you.
To me, it's like if you have an iPhone and you have a non-Touch ID Mac, you can Apple Pay by confirming on the phone, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it's kind of like that, but it would just be in the keyboard.
Yeah.
Like an external keyboard.
Maybe you make...
I don't think this means that they're going to ditch the Touch Bar. It's just clearly they're having price cost concerns with this computer enough as it was, and they couldn't afford to put a big OLED strip in there for the, you know, quote-unquote entry-level machine.
Yeah, I was concerned that the line from the community, the, you know, people that judge this stuff would say, oh, the Touch Bar is dead. Touch ID is there, no Touch Bar. But it's clearly that this is they don't have room in this computer to price it out. And having an OLED strip is expensive. Well, it's not cheap. And so it's definitely cheaper, obviously cheaper to use function keys there. So it isn't that they don't want Touch Bar everywhere on every Mac. You know, don't mistake that. They just want this to hit a price point, and they haven't even hit like the MacBook Air price yet. So yeah, here we are.
And the introduction of Touch ID in the world of Face ID on all the iOS devices is a bit discombobulated. I mean, like, even the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro hasn't been updated at all. So that doesn't have any biometric authentication on it. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that is
definitely
cool.
We're in a weird transition here.
Yeah, the Touch ID on a Mac now is like, it's cool if you have no Apple Watch and I guess no iPhone, like for the Apple Pay stuff, it's still nice to be able to log into like an app like 1Password or something that lets you authenticate with your fingerprint to open the app. But in terms of like opening your Mac without a password, the watch can handle that. And not everyone has a watch, so like Touch ID is cool there if you don't have a watch. And then Apple Pay can extend to your Apple Watch or your iPhone. And in that case, like you're bypassing the Touch ID sensor, you know, as an option there. So it's like, you know, Touch ID, cool. But it's not – like it's neat that it's on this Air without Touch Bar. Like that's just different, and that the non-Touch Bar Pro doesn't have it yet if it's
– And you wouldn't expect Face ID to come to this Air first. Like it's not in the price range, right? So adding Touch ID to it is good, but it's then like – it reflects on the other products in the line. Like, you know, the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro, they actually going to update that at all? Because when they did the 2018 MacBook Pro revision on the Touch Bar models, it was like, oh, well, then clearly there'll be something ready for the non-Touch Bar. They're going to do something with the non-Touch Bar ones later in the year, whether that's kill it off entirely or give it a spec bump and give it the new keyboard and stuff. No, that it's just still sitting there, just existing. And it's like, if they add Touch ID to that next year, that feels even worse if other stuff starts to get Face ID. It's not very clean, let's put it that way. Yeah. Obviously, they bring the T2 chip, like as seen in the iMac Pro and the MacBook Pro, which is all the security stuff. You get secure boot. Obviously, that controls the Touch ID sensor as well. And actually, one thing they posted in the security white paper, which is interesting, is that like the Facebook portal, which I never thought we'd bring up again, the speaker, the T2 chip actually does a hardware disconnect of the microphone when the lid is closed.
Like the privacy advocates at Facebook, the new T2 chip in the MacBook Air, and I guess the other Macs now too, does a hardware disconnect of the microphone. That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. They say, we do not hardware disconnect the camera because the camera is black when the lid is closed because there's no light getting into it. But that's an interesting thing. I do wonder how that actually works, because surely you need some sensor to detect that the lid's closed.
Right.
And if you can circumvent the lid closing sensor, surely you can keep the microphone on. Like, I hope somebody does a more technical analysis of that. But that's a cool little thing that I haven't mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And obviously that brings Hello Siri support to the MacBook Air. They have 3 microphone array now for better reception. It does use the same butterfly keyboard that the 2018 MacBook Pros use, so mm-hmm. It's quieter and quote-unquote more stable and hopefully more reliable than the previous butterfly keyboards. It does anecdotally seem like the 2018 revision has helped, not solved the problem entirely, but it definitely
The verdict is still out, because like, you know, part of the thing to feel good about is that it has the new membrane, which is a layer that can hopefully keep dust out, but then also like there's still space there that dust can get trapped in, so we don't know how effective it'll be. And like anecdotally, there are fewer reports of failed keyboards, like a lot fewer, but also there are probably a lot fewer 2018 MacBook Pros in the wild than there are 2016 and 2017, just based on time. So yeah, and the reputation of the keyboard. So I think that is still unclear, but probably better.
They tout the Force Touch trackpad as a new feature, because of course the MacBook Air design's so old it never got the Force Touch trackpad before, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
And louder speakers. In terms of the port situation, all of the legacy ports are gone. You now get 2 USB-C ports, but they are Thunderbolt 3, so you can plug whatever you want into them.
Yeah, our guess was that they would probably distinguish this MacBook by only having 2 ports, but having them be USB-C, so that the non-Touch Bar Pro with 2 USB-C Thunderbolt 3 ports would be distinguished. But the fact that this has Thunderbolt 3 ports, I mean, that's consistent with what MacBook Air did, which was have 1 Thunderbolt 2 port. But indeed, it was Thunderbolt, so high-speed transfer. This has 2 Thunderbolt 3 ports, like the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro, which, I mean, I think this thing squeezes out the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro in the next, like, hardware revision of, like, the whole lineup, you know. So we'll see what happens there. But I think that alone is a sign that the MacBook Pro without Touch Bar shouldn't really exist.
And of course, you can charge from either of the ports, but the ports are on the same side. They're on the left-hand side. So it's not, you don't get the same flexibility like the MacBook Pros, where you can plug it in on the left or the right, which is still one of my favorite features of my 2016 Pro. There's no question that doubling the number of ports from one, if you like, obviously them from compared to the 12 inch, which only has one, has way more than a doubling of actual functionality, because obviously you can plug, you can charge with one and actually plug in a microphone or another accessory with the other at the same time. So I think two USB-C ports, even if they weren't Thunderbolt 3, is a much better compromise of the port lineup. So I think people are pretty happy with that. Yes, you have to have dongles. Everyone knows the dongle situation. They they still have a headphone jack on the right hand side of the laptop. So
yeah, the tricky thing about the port situation is coming from the MacBook Air 12 inch, like, cool, you have two, and now they're also much faster, like in terms of how much data they can send across. But they're calling this MacBook Air. They're not calling this MacBook 13 inch. So you've got to compare it to the MacBook Air before this one that had two USB-A ports, Thunderbolt 3, SD card, and MagSafe. So you could charge and have two USB ports. And like now you can charge and have one USB port.
Yeah.
Or you could charge, have two USB-A ports, and do Thunderbolt for like display out or data transfer. So now you can't do that. You can charge and do Thunderbolt with one port and have no USB ports left. Like, you know. And then SD card's gone. Like, so they've definitely taken away in terms of like what their quote beloved MacBook Air could offer.
Because this is like the essence of the MacBook Air is great for education and schools and stuff, is because you could just plug it into projectors without really worrying about it, or just wander around and have, you know, legacy I/O compatibility.
And I have to imagine that's a big factor for the reason that the $1,000 MacBook Air still remains. Like, it's not even education only, but it's just still in the lineup. It's because, like, partly because they didn't hit the price point of $999, which I don't think they have to at first. Like, give it a few years and let it go down market, or like,
I mean, I think $1,200 is quite different to like $1,099 or $999. Like, they would lose a lot of sales, I think, if they didn't have a $1,000 laptop.
Yeah. But it's also the I/O. It's like it is a radical change to go from two USB-A ports, Thunderbolt 3, SD card, and MagSafe dedicated port for charging to a two USB-C port machine, and one of those is for charging. Yeah.
Do you think it's the number of ports is the problem, or is it just like the, you know, USB-C adapter situation? Because I don't tend to have, even on a 4-port MacBook Pro, I only tend to have like two things plugged into it at a time, really. Like, I don't know if people run around with loads of stuff, but, and of course you can hook a USB-C port into a, you know, 4-port USB-A adapter if you want to. Like, you can drop it off. I think
then you're crossing worlds of C and A in terms of the cables that you're using. So it's like, if you could go from, and I think it's coming in the future, but if you could go from one USB-C port to four USB-C ports, then people would be a little bit happier about the transition. But when you've got across worlds, then it's not so nice. I think it's a mix of, like, I mean, the fact that SD is gone, for people that use that will care. I'm not so sure that people will care that Thunderbolt 2 is replaced by like a USB-C safe Thunderbolt 3 port. But I can't imagine a scenario where people are like irked by, you could charge and have two ports and now you can charge and have one port, you know?
Mm-hmm. The CPU, as we mentioned before, is the new Intel generation, but it is no longer of the old class. Like, they've taken it to the, I think it's the Y class, which is like the 12-inch MacBook. You can get 16 gigs of RAM now on the MacBook Air, and the SSD is 60% faster. So it's faster, but it's not as fast as the Pros, which obviously a lot faster. The Y CPUs get a lot of criticism for being really bad. I think we have to wait and see, like, what people actually, you know, whether people feel constrained by it as you know, daily laptop on that
one. And they're still doing 8 gigabytes of RAM as the minimum that you get.
Yeah.
So like, and then the thing that bothers me the most is that the MacBook Air for $1,099, you get a 128 gigabyte SSD, and the MacBook 12 inch for $1,299, you get Is that what? No, it's $11.99 for the MacBook.
Yes, yeah, right? The default config is 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gig SSD for $1,200.
Yeah, so I'm just not happy with like the lineup right now. I think it's in a transition stage. For $1,200, you get.
Don't you feel like we've been in transition stage for so many years?
For a decade, though? Yeah. For $1,200, you get a MacBook Air 13-inch with 128 gigabytes of storage. For $100 more, you get a MacBook 12-inch that's more portable, lighter weight. And you get twice the storage, 256 gigabytes. Like, why does that justify more storage than the larger one? Like, I know it's to hit this price point, but 128 gigabytes SSD, like, that probably needs to die. Like,
yeah, that is very punitive.
Yeah, it's tough to deal with.
It's like the MacBook line has just been in constant flux since they did the first Retina MacBook Pro in 2012. It's gone like crazy with, oh, we're starting down this direction, but then the MacBook Air never got Retina, and then we brought in this 12-inch MacBook, which was going to be the future of the MacBook line, but then never really went down in price either, and then kind of stood around, and then we did this Touch Bar MacBook Pro, and the MacBook Air still didn't change, and then we went to USB-C on everything, and then everyone complained about that, and that was still more transition, and then the Touch Bar made everything more expensive, and now we're into this generation, which is a new MacBook Air, which is kind of like a 12-inch, but the old MacBook Air stays around, and the non-touch bar exists now, and there's function keys on some, and touch bar on others, and touch ID here. It's like, I never feel like we've had a state stability on the Mac line, like, for as long as I can remember, almost. Like, when the MacBook Air, the 2010, was new, that was really, like, the last time it was, like, a stable lineup, and then, since then, they've been adding so much technology, and also making radical decisions that they've never really got to like a clean break again. Like this definitely doesn't solve that problem. Yeah. Like a lot of people, including us, were kind of hoping that this would be the year that they kind of clarify this stuff. And this, which we were hoping would be like a sub-$1,000 machine, would help wipe out some of these categories that kind of like fill very weird niches but don't really holistically work together. But this is not that.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Hyper, and they have a cool new product available for MacBook Pro. Hyper's new HyperDrive USB-C hub attaches directly to the MacBook Pro's power adapter, adding two USB-A 3 ports in addition to the USB-C port that is usually there. Instead of using a hub that connects to your MacBook's ports, or carrying around a separate adapter to charge your other devices on the go, you can have one adapter for your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, and other USB devices. The USB 3 ports also support both data and power, meaning you can connect USB flash drives and other USB peripherals to the USB-C MacBook Pro on top of charging. For a limited time, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour listeners can get 25% off by using the link in the show notes. Thanks to Hyper for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour's Apple event coverage. Get 25% off the new HyperDrive USB-C hubs for MacBook Pro. Yeah, and even if you think 128 gigabytes is enough for you, which it can be for a lot of people,
it's still $1,200.
Yeah, well, and with the 12-inch MacBook in 2015? Yeah, because they've had 2015, 2016, 2017 so far, and they've had three. In 2015, the 12-inch MacBook, Apple decided that 128 gigabytes was not enough for that machine, that you need at least 256 gigabytes. And they could have offered less and sold it for less, because on the new MacBook Air, the upgrade to go from 120 gigabytes just to change your storage to 256 gigabytes is $200. So that's what they charge for.
Wait, that's the only change?
That's the only change. If you want to go from $1,200 to, you know, the base model for 120 gigabytes.
So you go from 1,200 to 1,400, and all you get is the double in SSD.
That's all you get. So Apple says there's a $200 price for that storage amount. So
that is ridiculous.
Theoretically, Apple could sell the 12-inch MacBook for $200 less. So it could be $1,099. And if they think that 120 gigabytes is enough storage for somebody. But for 3 years.
Yeah, why don't they do that?
3.5 years, they've thought it wasn't, and now in the MacBook Air it is.
Because they made a big deal about this being the cheapest Retina MacBook, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was one of their lines in the presentation. But if you equalize the storage, it's more expensive.
by $100. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, if you equalize the storage, you also get more screen space and Touch ID in T2, but and Thunderbolt 3 versus just USB-C speeds and one more port. So that's a pretty good value for $100. But it's just, you know, it's really, in that regard, a $1,400 computer, not a $1,200 computer, which is not a $1,000 computer.
Like, I just feel like all these prices are $200 more expensive than they should be.
Yeah.
And how long is it going to take them to get those prices down? Like, and why did this computer take so long to come out? Like, this is really just a 12-inch and a non-touch bar with some slightly different choices in between the two of them. And I don't understand why it took them this long to come out with this Air. Like, they clearly weren't waiting for the price point because it's $1,200 starting. And the technology in it is like what they could have done 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Like,
yeah. I don't want to be sour on the new MacBook Air, Air in air quotes. But there's a lot that like kind of annoys me about it, like in just terms of like how it's marketed and how it fits in the lineup. But on its own, like if I were buying a new laptop today, I would be totally happy with this. Like knowing I can live in the world.
Would you be
USB-C.
Happy paying $1,400 though?
Yeah. I mean, it's not perfect, but like in the reality of like what Apple notebooks cost today and like what specs you get, like in terms of I/O and everything, like it's a very cool computer. Like it is neat.
I think it's a better choice than the 12-inch and the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
I think you can probably argue that 13-inch MacBook Pro, like maybe you get your best value there.
You get a different CPU class.
Yeah, maybe you get like better, like for like your money's worth over time, like maybe that's a better purchase. But I'm glad this is a wedge shape. Like for example, I'm glad it's not, you know, a non-tapered design,
and it's smaller than the older. It's like 70% smaller volume, 10% thinner. Like the form factor is different.
Yeah, it's just the fact that the 12-inch MacBook is like more portable and even smaller without being too small. Because I mean, it's bigger. Like the 11-inch MacBook Air was too small, and that was like super niche computer. The 12-inch MacBook, because it's a full-size keyboard, like the keyboard defines the width of the bottom of the machine, and like the screen is like what's left, and you can scale your resolution to fit more content on the screen. Like that's a really capable and portable machine. But I would tell people like the MacBook Air is not the MacBook Air of like, you know, what it used to be, but like neither are the Pros.
Don't buy the MacBook Air that's called MacBook Air and it's $1,000 one. Don't buy that one.
Get the one that looks like it's new, not the old one. And I don't think we've mentioned it or have it in the notes, but it also comes in space gray and gold for the first time, which is new for a computer that's called MacBook Air.
Cool colors. And they made a big deal about this, and I do think it's important. It's 100% recycled aluminium. Mm-hmm. So they use the shavings of offcuts of some of the other products they make coming up later to create the chassis for this.
Yeah.
And it's taken, and seeing as how much aluminium is Apple uses in their products, like moving to 100% recycled aluminium is a big deal for the environmental stuff. Like you cut down on so much just carbon footprint from actually having to mine the stuff. Like if you can just use shavings, because before they would like have a big block of aluminium, cut out an iMac screen, and then use the remaining block to make like a keyboard. Whereas this is like the tiny little shavings and offcuts that they can remold into the exterior casing, which is cool. And it's nice to see them do that. But the pricing is problematic, I think.
Yeah. It's not so insane that it overlaps with every computer. Like it's different trade-offs in the 12-inch MacBook in terms of it's a little bit bigger, and then different trade-offs of the non-touch bar MacBook Pro, the 13 inches, because it is a little bit more portable than that. It's just not dramatically different.
Your point about like the $200 price difference for the SSD upgrade, and if you just took the 12-inch today and dropped it to $1,099,
yeah.
Like, surely they can do something and get that to $999 and have a 128 gig 12-inch. Like, Because they didn't even update the MacBook this year, right? It was 2017 it was updated.
Yeah, so a couple things there. In terms of the MacBook Air, like, they've got gold, and this is the first time that they've used this shade of gold. This is the gold that came with iPhone 8, where they took rose gold and gold and made new gold, which is like a little bit in between. And they brought that to the $329 iPad as well. And then it exists on the Apple Watches this year, I guess. So like, that is a new shade of gold. Well, now they have that on the MacBook Air. So it's the first new Mac with that shade of gold. Before, the MacBook, 12-inch MacBook, came in gold and rose gold. And as of the event, they've dropped rose gold from that MacBook, and they've introduced new gold to that MacBook. So yellow gold is gone. It's now a new shade of gold that's like in between. So the gold's been standardized across the line now. Except for, I think, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro that lives on. So it still has yellow gold and rose gold. But with that change, they didn't do any specs difference to the 12-inch MacBook. It's just like now it's got a new shade of gold. So there's like a like revision 2 of that, which is just the color. But yeah. What was the question again? I forgot.
I said, why didn't they do a $999 12-inch? By taking the $200 off, give it 128 gig, as you said, they've seen this as acceptable now. And then, it's a year later, right? They haven't updated the internals, so surely right. They can just drop off an extra 100 and then have a $999 12-inch.
Yeah, so no change to the 12-inch MacBook at all. Like, it's still $1299, yeah. 256 gigabytes. If they can change that, like if they think 128 gigabytes is acceptable, then yeah, sell it for $99, sell it for $1099, like, and then call it MacBook, I guess. And like, the best argument I've heard for like why this the 13 inch can be called Air now is that like MacBook is like the small portable MacBook, no modifier to the name. MacBook Air is like the MacBook Pro form factor, but it's lighter than that, so it's called Air. So it's like the Air version of the Pro. And like,
I really think they called it Air because they wanted to ditch the feeling of, oh, they've just let the Air languish for so many years. So
me too,
because they could have called this a 13-inch MacBook, which is, I think, more kind of appropriate for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
but then they'd still be selling the $999 MacBook Air, right? So everyone would be going, and they're still selling the $999 MacBook Air that they've never updated, where it's now, oh, well, they have actually updated the MacBook Air, and people kind of forget more about the $999 configuration that's still around.
It's definitely a marketing trick at play here.
Yeah.
but it's at like, the same time, like, what I'm having to get used to is that even though it's a marketing trick to call this MacBook Air, it is MacBook Air now. Like, just like MacBook Pro to Mac, you know, 2012 to 2016 was MacBook Pro. Like, really, it was kind of like more like an Air version of that. and even like the 2008, 2010 MacBook Pro before that, like, that was bigger and thicker, like, before it went Retina, I guess. Like, that was a bigger and thicker, and like, they slimmed that down too. So it's following that trend. But yeah, it's definitely a weird machine. Like, the price point, I don't think they've got the price thing solved yet. And then the naming convention is all over the place. And the fact that they did not take any Mac out of the lineup yesterday, right? Like, the MacBook Air still exists. MacBook Pro without Touch Bar still exists. Neither are updated. They've only added to the lineup. They haven't simplified it by introducing this machine yet, which is confusing.
Yeah, like, in isolation, and if you kind of ignore the price, I think it's a good offering.
Sure, yeah, good machine.
And then as soon as you put everything next to the side of it, you should have the same complaints as ever about the lineup being confusing. Like, yeah. They haven't addressed that.
And simple as. I think it's, like, hopefully fair to assume that next year something changes, because they haven't.
Oh, but we said that last year.
I know. But they haven't touched the 12-inch MacBook, and it's changed every year. Like, in 2015, it came out in the spring. The year later, 2016, it got like updated, and then a year later it got updated again, like around the same time of year. It was like give or take a few months. This year, nothing's changed there. Also, nothing's changed with the non-touch bar MacBook Pro, which,
or the original MacBook Air that is still also they didn't even cut the price on it. It's still $999.
Yeah, that's just like legacy state though. But is the MacBook and non-touch bar MacBook Pro like legacy state too now? And like, is it gonna go away?
Maybe it's
unclear. Or will it get revised? Like.
Yeah.
Maybe they're looking to see like how this thing sells, and then they're going to decide. They're like, let's test this out. We're not going to make any assumptions.
Well, once again, I'm crossing my fingers that they have a master plan that has just taken even longer to roll out than expected.
But I totally think that the fanless 12-inch MacBook with Retina display fits in the lineup, and that the MacBook Air as we know it today fits, you know, fills in a gap there. The non-touch bar MacBook Pro is probably too good of a value and confusing in the lineup, and that needs to go away. And then all MacBook Pros should be touch bar, like 13-inch, 15-inch. That's what you get. And just doing that, I think, simplifies things. Having the MacBook Air and the non-touch bar MacBook Pro that was literally introduced as an alternative to the MacBook Air. Like, Phil Schiller was like, we challenged the team to you know, it was like, he said MacBook Air in that presentation as if to frame that as the replacement. People didn't bite on that. Now they have a MacBook Air that has similar specs. So take it out of the lineup, I guess, you know. And that would be way simpler. Even if you do the stupid name of MacBook, MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, at least the form factor and price point would make more sense. But the non-touch bar MacBook Pro, confusing.
Are you ready to talk about another product that took forever to get an update?
Is it Apple Retail?
Not quite. Because Laura goes away, Tim comes back, and it has this crazy like UFO video, which makes a Mac Mini descend from the sky.
It's really cute video. It's like.
I mean, it was cute.
It's like Wall-E level, like Pixar level. Like.
Yeah, it really was. I think it kind of hyped up a bit though, because I was like, oh, it's going to be a new look. They're going to make it look. And then it comes down, and it's the exact same chassis. But don't worry, it comes in space gray, mm-hmm. So we know it's pro focused. And then they had another new face on the stage, Tom Boger, who does like Mac hardware product marketing. He was around for some of the Mac Roundtable stuff, and like when Panzerino got the Mac Pro 2019 thing out in the year, that was one of the people he spoke to, but we've never actually seen him on stage before, so now they're giving him stage presence as well. And he discussed the new Mac Mini, which is the first update in like 1,500 days. They have quad-core, 6-core, not mobile, they stressed, CPUs.
Yeah.
It's 32 gigs of RAM base, and you can configure it up to 64, which is kind of replaceable, but they still encourage you to go to an Apple store to get it replaced, so sort of user accessible. They've dropped all the hard drive configurations. It's all SSD. You can max out to 2 terabytes. It obviously comes with the Apple T2 chip. And unlike the MacBook Air, they have definitely retained the spirit of the port situation with the Mac Mini. You get 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, HDMI, and 2 USB-A ports on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously a much more faithful story to what the Mac Mini has been in the past, right?
Yeah, I want to tweet at you and email you real fast in real time. The base memory is 8 gigabytes, not 32.
Oh, really? Oh, that
sucks. Yeah, it's a big difference. Not even 16, 8 gigabytes.
Oh, well, that is... Yeah, I mean, the Mac Mini, we can have a pricing argument about that one as well. But that is kind of disappointing.
The base model got more expensive, like as we expected, and it got like modern IO, but the base specs on their own, like, they're not very good.
So I think I got confused because on the slide they showed 32, but I think what you're saying is because before you could only max out to 16.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can max out to 32 and you can max out to 64. So I guess that's where they were going that. But yeah, you're right. The base config is still 8.
Yeah, base config is very bad. It's like MacBook Mini Air. But for certain needs, it's fine, but it's also expensive.
And they have 10 gigabit Ethernet as an option.
Yeah.
So that's what first debuted in the iMac Pro, but it doesn't come standard. That's $100 extra. And again, it's
You kind of priced out like the part for that, and it's kind of fair pricing, right?
Yeah. Out of all of the upgrades that you can buy for the Mac Mini, the $100 extra for the gigabit Ethernet is the 10 gigabit Ethernet is okay, because you can buy PC cards that are obviously for like the big towers,
mm-hmm.
that are like $70 or even like $150 if you want to get, like, I don't think out of all the upgrades you can complain about the pricing, particularly the SSDs. The 10 gigabit upgrade for $100 is okay. So it looks stupid when you're optioning it, right? Like,
yeah.
I have to pay $100 for an Ethernet port, but obviously, like, 10 gigabit is still pretty new and very few people need that, really.
In the context of all of it, it's only on the iMac Pro, not even an iMac, not a MacBook Pro. It's only on the iMac Pro, and now the Mac Mini optionally $400 more. And think about Ethernet. Like, what's the difference there, like, versus the Ethernet port that you get otherwise?
Well, the current gigabit Ethernet is one, so it's 10 times.
Okay, one times 10. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Surprisingly, it's 10 times, bucks, 10 times more. 10 times, and it's obviously mainly used if you're connecting up to, like, really fast server infrastructure stuff, because of no, you know, home broadband is going to max out at 10 gigabits. So it's for, like, server intranet stuff.
At best, you get 1 gigabit at best.
Okay. And again, it's made from 100% recycled aluminum. And like you said, the default config is 8 gigs of RAM, 3.6 gigahertz quad core. Again, 128 gig SSD. Cha-ching.
Yeah, that's
$799.
I guess they showed, like, the server farm use case, and I think MacStadium as an example in the presentation, which was neat, especially for a box that, like, was originally presented as kind of a Windows switcher, keep your Windows display, keyboard and mouse, and just switch to Mac. Now they've changed the pitch for Mac Mini to what people are using it for these days, as the iPad becomes, like, the Windows switcher machine. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what to think about a Core i3 processor in comparison to other chips and Macs. I know that 8 gigabytes isn't crazy high. I know that 120 gigabytes is not a lot of storage, but I guess if it's, like, for server usage, maybe it's fine. But for, like, home, like, your home computer, that could be tough unless you're doing a lot of cloud stuff, like if your photos are in the cloud, but or external drive attached to it, and you've got the I/O for that, but you're not going to have your massive photo library or your massive media library on that device without
it. Yeah, you'd have to use one of the Thunderbolt ports to connect it to external storage.
Sure, yeah.
$799 is pretty prohibitive if you just wanted to use it, like, enthusiast as well. Like, a lot of people before would just have Mac Minis connected up to the television or connect, you're running Plex and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
$800 is a lot for that. Like, you can get, before it was $599, and then the year before that it was $499, and now it's $799 entry level. It's quite high.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I feel like a lot of enthusiast users are better served from, like, NAS things, like Synologies and stuff. Yes, mm-hmm. You don't get Mac OS, but you get that's like proper hard drive.
That's what I'm doing. You get Synology with a 4 terabyte, like, spinning hard drive, two terabyte hard drives inside, and then I have that for Time Machine backup over the Wi-Fi network, Plex, which is awesome to use for. And then also, like, if I just wanted a network attack storage for, like, putting large files there, I could do that too.
Yeah, I have 4 times 2, so I have 8 terabytes total. Yeah. And you can just pop the hard drives out. If you ever get a new hard drive, you can just click it out and click a new one in.
Yeah.
And you're off and running.
And I've got Homebridge?
Yeah, Homebridge, yeah.
For, like, non-HomeKit things to make them HomeKit, but I'm not using it for anything because everything I have is HomeKit.
But could do if you found something. Of use. Yeah, like, and the Synologies aren't as nice as using Mac OS, like, if you do this dumb web interface, but most of the time for me, like, for Plex and Time Machine, you set it up, like, one time, and then you just leave it alone, and it just does it. It's like...
Right.
And that can be as cheap as, like, $200, and it can be, like, $400, and for $400, you can even get ones which have 4 drive bays, like, in place. Like, you don't have to have weird cables popping out. Like, the enthusiast Mac Mini market, I feel like, is not served here. This is more for, like, they showed things where they had the Mac Minis running, like, music production stuff on the road with, like, mm-hmm. DJing and things like that. That is probably what that default config is aimed at. And do you know how much you can spec the Mac Mini up to?
Not off the top of my head, no. What?
Guess.
2,400.
Double it.
$4,200
is the most expensive configuration.
Wow. Yeah, I was so you know, as you know,
I'm just gonna say it again. $4,200, and the majority of what you're paying for that is the 2 terabyte SSD. That's like $1,600 of that entire price.
Yeah. So as you know, like, I'm in the market for another Mac that is not the 12-inch MacBook, like, for my work machine, and you know, kind of rolled out the 12-inch Mac or the 13-inch MacBook. Now that's the Air. And I was looking at Mac Mini, and I was like, okay, I know I want 1 terabyte SSD and at least 16 gigabytes of RAM, but if I'm spending this much money, might as well go 32. And I think that was the only change I really did. And I was like, and I know I want the Apple wireless keyboard with numpad and a magic mouse, magic trackpad, and I want a 5K display. And so I priced it all together, and it was like, that alone was like $4,300 or so. And I was like, oh. And I think that was with 16 gigabytes of RAM and not 32. But that was like, you know, that you can buy an all-in-one for the same price, like or less.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can get a base entry-level iMac Pro for $5,000, right? Like,
yeah, or a refurb.
And that's the 10 gigabit Ethernet built in, and you have a beautiful screen in an all-in-one machine.
Mm-hmm. Not the LG 5K. And it's like the only thing that made me think the Mac Mini approach makes more sense is that you can change the display out if a better one comes around, but there's no guarantee that like whatever Apple makes for it will work. Like that probably will require the new Mac Pro. Like, you know, our dream scenario is like a 32-inch 8K display or something, you know, that requires the new Mac Pro to work. Like it probably won't work with a Mac Mini, you know.
Yeah, and they haven't set like it. They haven't. All they keep saying about the Mac Pro is it also comes with an Apple Pro display, high-end Pro display. They keep using that word.
Yeah, it doesn't come with, but like they are going to make it a Pro display.
Yeah, they're gonna sell one alongside it.
Yeah,
and but they do not say that this is external display that will be useful on all of their Macs. That's kind of like the current implication, but they have not confirmed that. And if they do indeed make like an OLED 8K panel, then it's probably going to use some weird connector that will only be on the new Mac Pro. So.
Sure.
And at the moment, if you want to plug in different monitors to your, like, say you want a 5K monitor for your Mac Mini, hypothetically, you don't really have many choices. Like, you're not even getting that much flexibility. You get LG, yeah, and there you go. It's like...
Hope you like the ultra-fine display. It looks great. They managed to fit the webcam in the top. The big old forehead.
Yeah, if you get... You can get an iMac Pro and get a 1080p camera right where you want it. Still my best life for the whole keynote. Yeah. So yeah, the Mac Mini pricing, the Mac Mini, I don't know, it's clearly the
Bravo for updating it after 4 years. The update before that took 2 years. And none of this in the MacBook Air and the Mac Mini, like I don't really see the reason why they couldn't do this before, except for just like focus and like resources, I guess. But I mean, because they didn't like re-engineer the Mac Mini or anything like that.
It does have now a slightly weird, different internals for better airflow.
Yeah. So I'm glad they got rid of the spinning hard drive. I'm glad they don't have like a Fusion Drive compromise, like the base. I think 120 gigabytes is skimpy, but fine for certain needs that Mac Mini could do. And for, like I'm kind of coming around to 120 gigabytes as a base option. Like, do a MacBook in that, the 12-inch version, and sell it for less. I was kind of tempted. I think the Space Gray looks really cool as like sitting on your desk, because this isn't something that you know if it's your desk computer, you don't have to hide it. You can have it on your desk under your display. You know, access the ports pretty easily. They're in the back, but like kind of slide it around or like reach back there. They didn't drop any ports really, right? They only added to this. This is impressive.
Yeah.
For modern Apple. it's a good product. It's just, you know, be prepared to pay, which was what we expected. And I can't wait to see the 2022 version.
The funniest thing about this is on the Apple.com homepage at the moment, it says the best, like, the update of a lifetime for the Mac Mini. I'm like, well, you're not that far off. Like, yeah. You could die before you see another Mac Mini.
I will say, like, if you have an old iMac, like, even, and you only have to buy the Mac Mini and maybe a display, but you keep your mouse and keyboard, like, that saves you $300. Or best case scenario, you have a display that you like that you want to keep using, and you have a mouse and keyboard that you like. Like, maybe you were a Mac Mini user before and you're upgrading that. Like, then this is like spending $1,000 on a decent configuration. That's not a bad thing. But once you have to buy the keyboard and mouse and display like all at once, then you probably should consider an all-in-one computer.
Yeah, like the iMac 5K is such good value.
It really is. And the fact that like the display, the all-in-one casing, like even with the big bezel, is more attractive than the LG 5K, which is not cheap.
Yeah, because you don't have loads of cables to plug in.
9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Capterra, the free resource for finding the software you need for your business. Have you ever been assigned a new task at work with no idea where to even start? We're all bound to face unexpected hurdles at work. Don't let finding the right software be one of them. With 2019, fast approaching, you don't have time for unexpected hurdles to derail you. Find software for your business fast with Capterra's new free ebook, The Big Book of Free Software, which you can download for free at capterra.com/happyhour. Capterra.com is the free resource to help you find the software you need for your business. And with helpful information on over 300 different software tools, their Big Book of Free Software can help you find a completely free tool to test today. And it's absolutely free, so you won't have to ask your boss for a penny. Whether you're looking for a new project management tool, recruiting software, or an email marketing solution, Capterra's Big Book of Free Software has something for you. Visit capterra.com/happyhour today to get your free copy of The Big Book of Free Software. That's Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/happyhour. Capterra.com/happyhour.
I don't want to criticize the Mac Mini too heavily because I've never been in the market for a Mac Mini really, but I'm skeptical about who is going to be pleased by this change. Like, I don't, it feels weird to me.
Yeah. It's better than what they were doing yesterday or the day before. So.
True. I mean, you can't argue with that, I suppose. And then the big star of the show is
Angela Ahrendts.
Oh yeah, there was a nice segment where Angela Ahrendts got a massive round of applause from all the Apple Store employees seated in the crowd. She talked about some new Today at Apple sessions, and that's about it. And then Tim comes back to introduce the new iPad Pro. Interestingly, he started by giving a shout out to the iPad Mini and the 9.7-inch 2018 iPad.
The iPad Mini was such a fake out.
Yeah, that kind of got me, oh, they're going to do the iPad Mini update that Quo rumoured. But no, the iPad Mini stays the same. And then when they wrap up at the end, they even say iPad Mini 4, like stressing the model number. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh dear, okay, fair enough. Tim called this like the biggest iPad Pro update since the original iPad. And he brought out John Ternus, VP of Hardware Engineering, to go through the iPad changes. Ternus is not a new face, but he is relatively new. He did like the iMac Pro unveiling and the iMacs last year. So he's been kind of seen as like the Mac guy, but now he's doing like a big iPad Pro reveal. Mm-hmm. I mean, this iPad Pro does look pretty. Like, there's no other way about it. You get really, really narrow borders. The screen has rounded corners. They call it Liquid Retina, so it's like the iPhone XR.
And it's not the same rounded corners as the iPhone where it matches the edge of the screen. And we had this debate on Happy Hour, back in the summer. It was like, will they do rounded corners or will that take away too much content in terms of like having to like match up with where it ends? And it was kind of in between where like it doesn't match the edge of the display. They go a little bit deeper. They cut in deeper than that, but it's still rounded.
Yeah, the radius is... I think the radius is the same, but because the bezels inset so much, the actual amount of arc you need is very slight.
Mm.
Like, so if you have thinner bezels like the iPhones do, you have to trace more of the arc because of where, if you imagine where the circle would be cut off by the rectangle to and then curve it,
mm-hmm.
you obviously have to have a more severe curve. So by having thin bezels, like they're not as thin as the iPhone, but they are significantly thinner. But they're still wide enough that the actual impact on the screen is not as much. Like, yeah. So the rounded nature of that screen is pretty slight. Like, they could have always made it square, and I don't think it would have made too much difference. But it's nice. Like, and you don't have the problem where loads and loads of the screen gets cut off by the corners, and that also means the insets don't have to be as severe. It's... The 11-inch actually has a different ratio now. So they changed, because they've dropped the 10.5, well, they haven't dropped the 10.5-inch, they still sell it. But the new iPad Pros have an 11-inch screen, which is actually a different aspect ratio to the old iPad, like 4x3.
Yeah.
It's actually slightly wider now, but they gave it a bigger screen in the same chassis as the 10.5-inch.
Yeah, so Ming-Chi Kuo of TF International Security's nailed the sizes, you know, which is no surprise. And over the summer, when Quo reported that at first, we had Michael Stieper like mock up what an 11-inch and 12.9-inch iPad with rounded corners, like the, you know, full screen would look like. And I think he had an issue where it was like, if you fit the 11-inch screen in the 10.5-inch iPad casing, you have to change the ratio. Otherwise, it isn't quite the same. And so he ran into that just in like creating, you know, renders based on rumors. And sure enough, they did that. They changed the aspect ratio, I guess, to fit the like the footprint of the 10.5-inch, but take it, you know, full screen, right?
Yeah. But the 12.9-inch, they keep the same aspect ratio and screen size, but they use the obviously smaller bezels to just shrink the chassis. And they also make both of the iPads sizes, they're now 5.9mm thin.
Yep.
And the 10.5-inch was like 6.2, I think. And the 12.9-inch was 6.9. So it's actually quite a big jump for the 12-inch, for the 30, well, it's essentially 30-inch, isn't it, in particular?
Yeah.
And that model now has overall 25% less volume. So it is going to feel significantly smaller in the hand, which is good because the iPad Pro style that I have, the 12.9-inch, does feel pretty ginormous.
Yeah, it's both heavy and big. And now it will be lighter, smaller, thinner, like all the good things. And with the 12.9-inch, I mean, it's such a small thing to discuss, but like because they round the corners, you literally lose some content there, like because they didn't do. I think they should have gone to 13 inches, like 13.0 or something, because then you couldn't make this argument. But like they literally cut off some content from before, and then you got the home indicator and like, you know, how that all works. So you kind of lose some content there, I guess.
Yeah, so you lose like 20 pixels basically on the bottom for the indicator spacing, which then just pushes everything up, and the status bar used to be 20 pixels and is now 24. When I say pixels, I mean points, because obviously it's Retina anyway, so it gets doubled up. So you do actually have slightly less usable screen space on the 12.9-inch, which is not the case.
Totally worth the trade-off for the after improvement.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Whereas the 11-inch will still have overall more screen space because obviously they added half an inch to the screen.
Yeah.
The inset is not going to make a massive difference, but it is worth like actually just pointing out because you are technically losing a small amount of screen area.
Yeah. The thinness thing is neat because like even my 9.7-inch iPad Pro from two generations back, I think it's 6.1mm, so it gets a little bit thinner than the 10.5-inch version. But this is 0.2mm thinner than that, so which is like the difference, I think, between like a 6 and a 6 Plus, which is noticeable in the hand.
Everyone on Twitter was saying, well, now the iPad Pro has to have a camera bump. I don't really know why everyone was saying that, because the iPad Pro's had camera bumps for ages.
Since the Pro?
Yeah, like it's always had a big camera bump. They have actually changed the design of the camera. Now it's more like the iPhone 7 series, where it kind of like molded into with the curvature, versus it just being like a plate stuck on top.
Yeah, I think it looks really nice.
Yeah, it does look good. For a bump, yeah, exactly. And the actual overall chassis design is like that CAD we saw a few weeks ago, where it's more iPhone 5-y with like squared off sides, and like it doesn't have that same curvature on the edges that the previous iPads did.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's like most similar to the original iPad 1, where it was like...
But the original iPad 1 had a curve on it, though.
On the sides? It had a curve on the back. But not
it had like the same sides as this iPad plus a curve underneath it.
Yeah, it had like an iMac bulge, but it didn't have it didn't have like chamfered edges.
Yeah, I guess it's closest to that iPad in terms of iPads. I think in terms of overall design, it's close to like an iPhone 5-ish or iPhone SE because it's aluminium edges.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking of the size because like on the 4 and 5 and SE phones, like it's layered, whereas like the glass face and the glass back plus the aluminum band, and this is like one flat surface, so it's like that first iPad, but then there is no bulge in the back, so it's like the best of both. It's really impressive design. Like I think, you know, when they did that video, you can find it like on YouTube or whatever, but they show like an effect of like running your finger around, like changing from the old design to the new design. And like the old design was like shinier. It was like chamfered edges, and now it's like matte flat finish. But I can't wait to try it out. Like the way to see how it feels and everything. It looks really modern.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a Surface in a way. Like the Surface is kind of boxier like that.
Yeah.
But it is different and it does look nice.
Yeah, sure. It isn't like chintzy plastic or anything either. It's like, you know,
it's more than just taking the old form factor and making the screen bigger.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the the iPhone X, as radical as it was, like the iPhones before it were kind of curved in the same way at the edges. They just didn't have the screen go the whole distance.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely a bigger shift there. Similarly, this iPad does have Face ID, and it works in every orientation, portrait, landscape, upside down. You have to train it in portrait, but then it'll actually work every which way. And the True Depth camera system is opposite the Lightning port on the front, on the edge. So it's on like the portrait top edge.
Opposite the new USB-C port, right?
I called it Lightning, didn't I? Yeah. So, and what's kind of funny is if you hold the iPad in landscape and you cover your hands over the camera, it will pop up a little arrow like, move your finger, move your hand.
And the arrow looks like it's borrowed from the Touch Bar MacBook Pro, where it has like a bouncy rubbery arrow that says like Touch ID here for Apple Pay.
Yeah, that's really cute.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic that they got Face ID to work in all four directions. They seem to say it's the faster one, so it's as fast as the XS. So it's not like they had to use the last generation Face ID to make it work in both the orientations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great they managed to do that. I think they say it's a combination of neural network training and hardware differences. I'm assuming just because there's more space there, the infrared projection can be bigger probably, which helps enable it both ways up, versus because I think they'd add it to the XS's if they could have done it, but clearly they couldn't. And in terms of performance, the A12X Bionic is inside both of them, which is an 8-core CPU and a 7-core GPU. They say it's up to 90% faster at multi-core task and 2 times faster graphics. Certainly a beast in terms of technical performance.
They skipped the whole A11 or A11X like generation here.
Yeah.
So the compare is like a 2-generation compare, right?
Yeah, although it's only a year and a half ago. So
year and a half ago, but like they never used that iPhone 10 class, iPhone 8 class chip and modified it for iPad. So it's kind of a leap there in terms of like it isn't like that they used like for iPhone, you can't do that. You can't say it isn't like comparing the iPhone 7 to the iPhone 10S. It's 7, 10, 10S. And in this, you go from 9.7 inch, which had like an iPhone 6S. Anyway, they skipped a year. And so there's a leap there that they can take advantage of in terms of these comparisons.
They even compared it to an Xbox. They said it had more graphics performance than an Xbox One S.
Yeah, I liked that context. just like clarifyingly saying like what it compares to, because for all I knew, so did like the iPad several generations ago. But now they're saying that they can compare it to the Xbox One S or whatever it's called.
And of course, that's potential performance.
Mm-hmm.
You need the software to take advantage of it, and I think there's definitely an argument of like the last year's generation was not pegged by its performance. It was like the software wasn't utilizing it. And I think a lot of that's still true now. It kind of made me laugh when they compared it to an Xbox, but then the game they showed was Assassin's Creed Rebellion, not Assassin's Creed, like some mobile game that was 2-dimensional. And like,
sure.
So it was kind of like setting up for something big, but then they just did a 2D like side scroller type game where you tap in the different rooms. So kind of a bit of a letdown on like their demo. They also had Photoshop that was similar to the Adobe Max demo, which is clearly what they're prepping this for. Like this is like the Photoshop perfect like canvas. They said it was faster than 92% of all portable PCs sold in the last year.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that stat because
it's also more expensive than probably.
Yeah, like how many percentage of portable PCs is more expensive than probably 92%? And then what are the 8% that aren't? They said it was faster than many i7s, but like I don't think that stat's very good. Like in the when they introduced the A10X with the last year iPad, they just said it was faster than most PCs, which for some reason maybe just accept the statistic more. I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But then they're like faster than 92% of all PCs. I'm like, for a start, well, what 8% are faster than it? And what are they? Because then it makes it more like direct in the comparison. Like,
yeah, it's as fast as these, you know. And then give price or give, you know, descriptions. You can say, wow, that's impressive. That it's like, because otherwise you can kind of dismiss it and say, well, most portable PCs are like under $400 or so. So,
and I feel like they're falling into the same trap as the iPhone XS, where it's like all very theoretical. We got 10 billion transistors, but. I thought it would have been better if they just showed like a laptop that you can buy for $1,000. Here's an iPad, and here I am browsing the web and it being slower on the computer. Like, I still think they're kind of wavering away from the demos that are like actually grounded in reality than they can actually stick. Because
it's like, I mean, you mentioned the software being behind. It's like once you can do like multi-app windowing on the iPad, that'll be a big leap, and then you can compare like what you can do on a Windows computer to what you can do on an iPad. And so, like, the performance is probably matching, but, like, the potential, like, capabilities aren't quite yet.
Yeah, because you can buy a $400 laptop and put four apps on the screen. And it's like, I can buy this $1,000 iPad Pro and put two apps on the screen.
Yeah, and like, maybe float one on top.
And maybe have a video on the side. But, like, the capability is not directly linked to the performance benchmarks.
Yeah, and this has been a problem for the iPad for years now. And, like, the hardware, no doubt, is incredible. And maybe even warrants the premium prices that we see. It's just that, like, with what most people can do, it's tricky to get there. Like, Apple has to do a lot of work on the platform, and then there needs to be software that takes advantage of it. But like, the main thing is that Apple needs to advance iOS. And like, you can say iOS 13 will do it. Okay, well, maybe it will. We'll see. But that'll be ready in a year. It'll be in beta next summer and it'll be ready in a year. You know, it's like you're selling these iPads today, and this problem isn't new to the iPad. Like, this has been a problem for every iPad. And like, you know, they had the thing where the iPad Pros last time they launched them at WWDC with a software beta that like took advantage of it better. But it was actually, I mean, it was a beta for several months and then it was out.
Yeah, they launched it with 10.3, but then obviously iOS 11 was in beta for the summer. So yeah, it's kind of the promise of delivering on that.
And then before that, like, you had a Pro iPad introduction, and then the year later, or, you know, the months later, iPad or iOS update, like, took better advantage of it. But, like, they need, I mean, like, ideally they would be in sync. They'd be like, here's a crazy new iPad, and here's the software that takes advantage of it. Not like, here's a crazy new iPad, and here's a check that we're going to write for software in the future, maybe, you know?
Yeah, and they're not promising anything on that. It's just based on rumors.
Totally.
Like, it could get delayed again. Indeed. And there could be the iPad 2019 out by the time that the software stuff comes through. Yeah. And even if you look at iOS 9 and iOS 11, which were obviously the high iPad focuses, as much as they went in on actually adding good functionality, like, looking back, I still don't think it answered many workflows, like, right. Realistically. I mean,
to me, windowing is the big deal.
Yeah. It's like, you added split screen, it was like, yeah. But in the end, I just end up with Twitter and, you know, the web side by side. It's like, great. Like, as much as I've tried, I can't use my iPad for anything more than like casual stuff. And these iPads are going to be slightly faster at doing the casual stuff and capable of doing more, but unable to utilize it, I think. Like, I was kind of hoping they'd have some Apple app, like Hero Apple app. Like, they were at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. I was wondering if they're going to do some kind of Logic Pro or like expansion of GarageBand type of deal.
Yeah.
Or even like a better iMovie, because iMovie on iOS is pretty basic. Like, they could add more to bring it closer to the Final Cut offering, but they didn't do either of that. So that was kind of a letdown.
Yeah. They've got this new 1 terabyte storage option, which
yep.
doesn't replace a tier. It just adds to the lineup, which I think is what, 64... 256, 512, and now 1 terabyte. And that's awesome. Like, you can have a very large storage iPad. And if you're framing these as pro tablets that can replace computers, like, you know, that is awesome. And there, you know, the iPhone just caught up with 512 gigabytes of storage, which was iPad first. Now the iPad has 1 terabyte. That is a lot of storage, and it's not 1 terabyte spinning hard drive. This is an iPad. It's flash storage, so it's really impressive. It's also very expensive.
And at least me, I would struggle to know what to do with 1 terabyte's worth of iPad storage. I don't know. It's there. I think it's there mainly for, because they had that Photoshop demo, and the person presenting was like, this is a 3 gigabyte Photoshop file. I was like, well, if you're dealing with 3 gigabyte documents, then yeah, you're probably going to want a lot of storage.
Like, yeah, I mean, Apple's got to make the hardware first and then you know, have the experiences created for it.
Yeah.
It would be a shame if, like, the software was super ready and then the hardware was, like, languishing. It'd be like, come on, Apple, do your job. but instead, obviously, the case is that the platform needs to be much more advanced to take advantage of the hardware, which is a really interesting problem. Luckily, you can buy the iPad Pro today, and then you will probably get software advances in the future without needing to upgrade your iPad. But that's been true for a few years now.
So. Steve Trowne-Smith said on Twitter that he believes that the 1 terabyte models get 6 gigs of RAM and the others get 4.
Yeah, at first he thought all new iPad Pros get 6 gigabytes of RAM, which would be very generous and more than any iOS device so far.
Yeah, all the 2017 iPad Pros have 4.
So. Yeah, and then he discovered, I think there's someone telling him that is in the know, that actually it's only certain ones, and we were kind of guessing, like, is it only 12.9-inch iPad Pros? would they distinguish by LTE for, like, cost reasons? No, it's 1 terabyte, probably for cost reasons. And I don't know what to make of that. Like, the tricky thing there is Apple doesn't advertise the RAM ever on iPads. They do on Macs. Like, that is a price point where you can pay more and get more. And they want you to know how much RAM it has. On the iPads, they don't. And I think they should, like, even if you can't upgrade them, like, I think it's part of the equation, you know.
If you're gonna have different models with different tiers of RAM, I really think you should mention it, because there's a possibility that, say, with iOS 14, they add an iPad feature that requires 6 gigs of RAM, and you're like, damn it! When I bought that 2018 iPad, I didn't know about this RAM limit, but suddenly, because they could theoretically introduce an iOS 14 feature that only works if you have a 1 terabyte 2018 iPad Pro, and you'd be like, oh, well, that sucks. Like,
is there no connection between the amount of storage and the amount of memory that you need to, like, to manage that amount of storage? Or
don't believe so.
Yeah, it's all
wrong
in my head, but
I feel like there's a much closer connection to screen resolution. So if they'd have said,
sure, yeah,
that there's 6 gigs of RAM on the 12.9, then it made more sense. Because they've done it on the iPhones before, right? They're higher resolution screens, more RAM on the Plus phones, for instance.
Yeah.
The distinction here seems very strange, yeah, because I don't know. I don't see why you would need more RAM. Because theoretically, you could say if you've got 1 terabyte, then you want to be opening bigger files, I guess. So then, say if you had a 6 gigabyte file, you're more likely to have a 1 terabyte iPad, so to keep it all in RAM at one time, you need more RAM. But equally, there's plenty of use cases where you could have a 1 terabyte iPad, or there's plenty of cases where you could have a 512 gigabyte iPad, and you just want more RAM because you want more things to be open at once. Like, yeah, it's not a perfect correlation by any means.
Yeah, I will be curious to see when people start using Photoshop in 2019 on the iPad. Like, if two things, like, if the benchmarks are different in any measurable way between the non-1 terabyte iPad Pros and the ones that are 1 terabyte. And then also, like, is the experience for, like, the same advanced, like working with a file in Photoshop, better with the difference in 4 and 6 is pretty significant, I feel like.
Yeah. It's 50% more.
Yeah, it isn't like 3 and 4, like on the 10R and 10S.
Yeah.
It's 4 and 6, so it feels like a bigger deal.
Yeah, so it's... I don't want to get too outraged about that until we can confirm it. So when we start having teardowns and Geekbench scores, we'll definitely see. But that is... The fact they don't mention it on any page of the website seems bad to me.
Yeah, eventually I think they need to address that and start,
yeah,
you know, talking about memory.
These iPad Pros have USB-C?
Yeah, I'm happy about that. It's neat.
Like I predicted, they did not say you can plug an external hard drive and copy files willy-nilly off of it. it's basically the same capabilities as what they offered before, except now because USB-C is more bandwidth, you can do multiple things at once with it. Like, you could connect a camera and have an external display connected, whereas before, the Lightning port would only let you have one at a time.
Mm.
But now you can mix and match more.
Yeah, the external display stuff's neat because it isn't just mirroring like what's on your iPad. Apps can take advantage of it, it looks like. Like, iMovie, they showed...
Yeah, having... but the iPads have been able to do that since 2010.
Really?
Yeah, my app, Bingo Machine, since the beginning...
Oh, it's like AirPlay mirroring version of that?
No, it works on TV out as well if you plug in with the cable.
Yeah, but like for AirPlay mirroring, you could long be able to do this where you have like controller as the UI on the phone, for example, and like the gameplay on your TV screen.
Yeah, they've literally had this for ages. Like, they've had external displays since the original iPad with 3.2 because they had the original iPad demo was to plug into a projector and do the keynote presentation, wasn't it? Okay. You control it on your iPad and show it on the screen.
I'll recheck my excitement then.
Yeah, so Bingo Machine would always have the controls and the board on the iPad, and then on the screen it would just have a big number, just to that's what you'd show in like the game hall or whatever if you're playing with a big group.
Yeah.
The thing that USB-C enables is 4K displays, and they said 5K on the keynote, but like the presenter said 5K, but the website only says 4K. So I think it might be like a slip of the tongue.
Probably you can connect to the 5K LG Ultrafine, but you get 4K resolution.
Yeah, it probably upscales it.
Yeah.
Because it's not Thunderbolt 3 port, it's only USB-C.
Right.
But I think it'd be cool if you are a photographer, because then you could plug your camera in, copy the photos across, and show them on an external display at the same time. So there are definitely some more flexibility with the USB-C, but it's... Again, I think some of this people will be waiting for software changes to...
Yeah, we talked a few weeks ago about the Skydio R1 drone that I tested with the Apple Watch. So you can change the mode from the Apple Watch and it follows you. One thing I think about that is it's got a USB-C port on the drone and it comes with a USB-C cable, and then you plug it directly into the MacBook and, you know, it's USB-C all the way. You launch the Photos app and it imports it from the drone's like internal storage. And theoretically, this would work the same way with the iPad Pro now. It's USB-C across the board, so you plug it up, open the Photos app, import your video with no adapter needed. Like that's pretty convenient, you know, whereas before you need Lightning to
it depends how much power the iPad gives out though.
Yeah, I'll let you know if it works.
yeah we'll get to that in a minute, but they did say you can charge your iPhone with it.
Yeah, and I presume other devices too. Like maybe in a
Yeah, it just depends at what out, because it could be slow charging of the phone, for instance. They didn't say like the exact. This is stuff we'll have to find out. Because
I think people will be excited if you can charge a Nintendo Switch from your iPad.
Yeah, that'd be pretty slick, because the iPad has a big battery.
Yeah, it does.
I think the best change they have done here is how the new Apple Pencil and how it connects, because they have a redesigned Apple Pencil with a flat edge on one side, and it's kind of a matte finish. You can double tap it like you can AirPods to do a special shortcut action, but it's magnetic and it snaps onto the side of the iPad. And not only is it there for safekeeping, that's also how it charges, which is so much better. I wasn't on the plugging in the Lightning port and letting it sit there for a few minutes. I wasn't as offended by that as some people were. Like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I thought it was like, oh, it's a good solution for on the road. You need some charge, but this is clearly superior. Like, you just snap it to the side, it shows the battery percentage on the iPad screen, and it charges wirelessly, and you're done. Like, and it's never going to run out of battery, because the current Pencil, you leave it to the side, it drains pretty quickly. You snap this one on the side of the iPad, it knows when it needs to be in sleep mode, because it's snapped, and it can charge while it's doing it. Like, the battery's never going to run out until your iPad runs out.
Yeah, I am excited for this. I've had the Apple Pencil with the original 9.7-inch iPad Pro before. You know, I've had it the whole time, and I do enjoy like drawing and sketching. And I was very, very much impressed with the original Apple Pencil, like the low latency, the pairing method, the charging method was like whatever, but like, it was pretty good. This is like the S revision to that. Like, it addresses all of the complaints of the original version without any like crazy improvement, except for like, you know, the tap to change modes. Like, that's pretty cool too. But it's like this is that with some serious fixes to like the just literally the feedback people had about the original version.
And it's not like they haven't like increased the depth. They haven't added like another 5,000 layers of force detection or anything like that. Right. It's the same basic detection of the pencil. When everyone seemed to think that was great, so I don't think they're in any. It was
The change between the first iPad Pro generation and the second, like the you know, this promotion and but didn't the pencil get benefit from that?
I don't. Well, the pencil benefit because the promotion screen, so you could see more. Like it would update more often when you were drawing.
Yeah, it looked like the benefit being that like as you draw, like it appears to be even like less latency.
Exactly.
Yeah. The pencil, that's a tangible benefit.
The pencil has always sent data at 240 hertz, even on my 2015. But you don't even see it at 60 hertz.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And then when you had 120 hertz, you could see it twice as often. Yeah. Whereas if you have a 60 hertz screen and 240, it would be collecting more data, but it could only update that to the screen, obviously, four times less.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it smoother, and obviously faster process also mean it renders to the screen even quicker. So lower latency, but I don't think the pencil like frequency ever changed. I'm pretty sure it was always 240.
Right, yeah. It was just the fact that the iPad hardware changed, and then the pencil, like because of the iPad hardware change, you could see that everything appear faster, so it was nice.
And promotion on the Liquid Retina technically means that next year they can put it on the 10R. Ding.
Okay. they won't, though.
One thing I want to point about the double tap is that an app can... Any third-party apps can use the double tap shortcut for whatever they want. But interestingly, Apple's kind of heavily recommending that it's used for one of, like, three actions.
Sure.
Because in the settings screen... You can choose what you want the double tap to do. You can turn it off, or you can use it to show a color palette, switch between the current tool and the last tool used, or switch between the current tool and the eraser.
Yeah.
And that preference, the app can know what the preference is, and obviously it can choose to respect it or it can choose to ignore it. But what Apple's basically saying is that most pencil apps should be drawing apps that have color palettes, erasers, and multiple tools. Because that's where they're going. That's clearly where they're recommending it to be used. Because otherwise the settings wouldn't be like that. They'd just be per app settings. So yeah, that's the global preference. And obviously an app can do whatever it wants, but Apple's heavily recommended that they follow the setting.
Yeah, so the user knows what to expect. It feels very analogous to AirPods, like the whole tap gesture thing and how you can change what it does. Like change it once, but like that's what it does. You know, it does what you want it to do. So I'm pleased by that. Without a physical clicky button either.
Yeah, I guess it just uses the accelerometer like the AirPods work.
Yeah. And I think the pencil has like tap to wake, so it can be asleep. And then like you tap it, feels motion, wakes up. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Atlassian and Ops Genie. Incidents are inevitable, and it all comes down to how your company responds. Incidents require complex coordination between operations and software development teams, who are the unsung heroes putting out fires every day. Getting alerts immediately is critical when an incident occurs. That's why there's Ops Genie by Atlassian. Ops Genie empowers devs and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. This gives teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues, helps to notify all the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones and holidays, allows for deep flexibility in how, when, and where alerts are deployed, supported by over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more, and tracks all activity and provides useful insights to improve future incident responses. Think about what happens when a website or service you love or count on goes down. Like when your playlist goes silent just as you're singing your favorite chorus. Or your streaming game freezes seconds before your team scores the winning point. Or your video conference flutters and dies in the middle of a big presentation. People freak out. I know I do. Even if this downtime lasts only minutes or hours, it impacts millions of people and costs businesses serious money. In just 1 year, downtime can cost companies over $700 billion, and make a lot of customers very unhappy. With OpsGenie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Visit OpsGenie.com to sign up to get a free company account and add up to 5 team members for free. That's OpsGenie.com, Never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie.
They had to redesign the smart keyboard because obviously the smart connectors moved to the backside. So now they have a smart keyboard folio, which is a back case and a cover. And it now has two screen angles, but it had two screen angles before because you could flip it around into a triangle, right, and have it stood up. Or you could have it in keyboard mode. But now it doesn't go into the triangle. Instead, when the keyboard's out towards you, you can have two angles. And one of the angles is basically the same as what the old watching angle was before.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed because it has this big area for like where you prop it up. And I thought maybe you could have like, you know, sort of infinite. And I said it's just two. But I guess in theory, like now you can have a keyboard in both angles, whereas before it was keyboard in one, non-keyboard in the other.
Yeah.
Going back to pencil for a moment, like I think the change there will make me, as someone who's enthusiastic about the pencil and likes to draw, use it way more. Right now, the pencil lives in a pencil cup on my desk, and you know I think to use it, but it isn't like, oh, I'm using my iPad, let me also use the pencil. It's like I've got to go and get it. And this is so much better, and that it's like, you know, it can always be there depending on how good the magnet is, but like while it's like charging it, you know. That is going to be a very nice change. And with the new folio case, like it feels like they thought about these two accessories together for the first time. Like before, it was difficult to like attach the pencil in any meaningful way with Apple's smart keyboard case. Like you could have a third party solution, but not Apple's two accessories together like very well. Now you can, like, you can clip it, doesn't interfere with the pencil at all. The pencil, like, even attaches to the right side of the iPad, which is the top of the iPad in this, like, landscape orientation when you're using the keyboard case. So I feel like they've really thought about this, like, based on feedback.
You just have to hope the magnets are strong enough so the pencil doesn't, like, get dislodged in your bag or anything.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if it's in a bag, like, that's not so much of a problem. Like, you know, it falls off, it's also in the bag. It's just, like, carrying it around, you know, that you don't want it to fall off with. So, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like if you put it in a bag, it gets knocked around, the pencil clips off. Like that wouldn't surprise me, but you don't want it to fall off. Like when you're like walking around, a coffee shop or something. But I saw in the video, the marketing video for this iPad, they show a breakdown of 102 magnets inside of the iPad. and they show like each individual, like each magnet, like falling into place. And I think like those are specifically for, you know, pencil obviously, and the folio style cases, like because most of the magnets are like along the backside,
yeah,
and the folio like it covers the back of the iPad, and it isn't by like glue or anything like that. It's magnet, and it has to be magnets like not just around the edge, but like the whole backside of the iPad. So I think that's pretty neat. My favorite thing about the smart keyboard folio is that it covers the sideways Apple logo that will inevitably be there whenever you use the iPad with a keyboard, because they didn't rotate the Apple at all, but they also didn't put an Apple logo on the keyboard folio. Like, so it's kind of neat there.
That'd be cool if they put a logo on it, like the
landscape,
like the leather cases.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about price in a moment, but like the price of all these things is like it's more than it used to be. It's a lot of money. Like, I'm upgrading from 2 years ago, so I feel like I can justify it more. But like, if you've got last year's stuff, it's really tough to like need to go out and replace all this stuff, you know. And it's also just expensive. Like you are in Mac pricing territory here.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well just address the pricing situation. The pencil is $30 more. The keyboard is $200 for the 12.9-inch version, which is up from $169. That's $30 more.
Yeah, $180
for the 11-inch version. Yeah, the iPad starts at $800, and that's for a 64-gig.
11-inch, and then $1,000 for the 12.9-inch, which is, you know, it made me think of the original Steve Jobs iPad introduction, where, like, they played off the press rumor that it was going to be $1,000, and it was half that at $500. It's like, Now we have one. But, I mean, I feel okay about it because it is, like, the highest-end iPad. There is a really good value $329 iPad that you can still purchase. So, like, they've almost, like, beat that original iPad introduction, because the original iPad was not what the new iPad Pros are. Like, it was it's closer in, like, relative to the $329 iPad, so they've kind of like brought the value down there, but they've also gone way up market.
The $329 iPad is such good value.
Yeah, it's really good value. So $1,000, if
because you can buy the pencil and the keyboard case, and you've paid more money than the entire of the $329 iPad.
Yep. The tricky thing here is that the old Apple Pencil doesn't work with the new iPad Pros, and the new Apple Pencil doesn't work with the old iPad Pros or the $329 iPad, because lightning pairing, you can't do lightning pairing on the new iPad Pros. And the new
USB-C ports,
the new Apple Pencil is a wireless pairing, and apparently doesn't work backwards. So that's a bit of a bummer.
Does the crayon work with the new iPad Pros?
I'm going to guess no. Like, I'm going to guess that it's still only on that 6th generation iPad. Like, by design.
So now you've got three stylus options that work with different subsections of the market. Because the 10.5, because the prices went up on the new iPad Pros, they're still selling the 10.5-inch iPad Pro at the same price.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of people on Twitter complaining that, like, now you've got to upgrade your stylus, and, like, the Surface Stylus 3 works with the Surface 6 or something like that. It's like, okay, cool. as we discussed last week, I think it's totally fair to take, like, the fall 2015 Apple Pencil and change it and make you need to buy a new one 3 years later. Like, that's what it really is. It's only two iPads later, but it's 3 years later.
What were they going to do? Like, people, like, clearly the old Apple Pencil couldn't magnetically attach, and it couldn't charge, like, inductively. So what were they going to do? Just, what were people expecting? Like, oh, you can trade in your Apple Pencil for free. Like,
I think it's too bad that it costs more. Like, it's,
if yeah, it I think 100- it's, I think it should be, I don't understand why it costs more. I'm pretty annoyed that it costs more. I don't see a problem with having to buy another one, because I feel like
$99 was pricey for a stylus, but it was good. It was a good stylus. $129, like, it's even more. It would have been nice.
What hardware has changed inside the pencil to make it $30 more expensive? Like, I don't see that at all.
I don't know, but
it doesn't have to have a lightning port anymore, right? So in some ways they've made it simpler to make.
They've shaved off the side. It's matte now, so it's, like, grippier, I suppose. And I thought it was, like, pencil-shaped, like, flat sides. And it's round, but with one flat side. So it's a little bit misshapen, but, you know, for improvement.
That probably feels nicer to hold, actually, though, because then you can, like, have a flat. And that's obviously where you do the tap gesture.
Yeah. I really want to master the pencil twirl. In one of the videos, this guy, like, you know, totally, like, flips it in the air. I want to master that.
But the base prices for the actual pros themselves as well feel pretty pricey too.
They needed to keep the 10.5-inch at $650, like, because these new ones are expensive. Like, you know, I can see
my 2015 iPad Pro that I bought in 12.9-inch was $799. That was 32 gig, so it's $200 more, but it's 64. Like,
3 years later now, it's $1,000 to get twice the storage, but the new version of that still has more. That's too bad. I can see the 9.7-inch to 10.5-inch to 11-inch being more expensive. You get more screen, like, it makes sense. But what they did with the 12.9-inch is tough. Like, I hope it comes back down and doesn't, like, stay this high. For some reason, $1,000 for an iPhone feels okay, but $1,000 for an iPad feels like you gotta really get use out of that iPad, like, make money from it to warrant that. It can't just be for video and, like, entertainment. I wanted a 12.9-inch iPad, but for some reason, like, that $1,000 mark felt like too much, and I was like, okay, I can probably live with 11 inches. I'm going to do that instead, like, because of the price. And I still bought the accessories, but it's like, man, that's tough.
You've spent $1,000.
Almost. I'm still under $1,000. I guess I added the keyboard case later, so I'm not sure where I am, but yeah, it's they're expensive. It's a pricey iPad. But, you know, in my case, I'm going from the 9.7-inch, 32 gigabyte, no promotion, to 11-inch, 64 gigabyte, still an upgrade. Get promotion for the first time. You know, the new screen design. My old iPad's cracked. It's like, I feel good about it. But, like, if you have last year's iPad Pro, and even in your situation with the 12.9-inch, like, it's tough to warrant the cost. Like, you need to sell your old stuff and get some money back from it. Which you can do.
Plus, buy a new pencil.
Yeah, yeah. If you sell your pencil, like, you know, I don't know what you can get for it. I think around $60, but that all helps. This was a pricey event in general.
Oh, and I think it comes back to the point I made earlier, which is I can spend all this money and still basically do the same thing as what I'm doing on my current iPad, just in a nicer packaging. Like, I'm technically losing screen, as we talked about before. Like, you lose some of the corners, get cut off, and yes, it's more powerful, and the 120Hz screen is still really nice from last year's generation, but, like, it feels like a really big commitment to then go and spend another $1,000 for something which I can't envision myself doing more than what I do in my current one, which is like browse Twitter, read email, and watch videos on. Like, and I love it. I use it every day for that, like at nighttime and stuff, before I'm going to bed. And then in the morning, I usually Twitter on that before I get up and like take my phone to do, you know, to the office. But yeah, like $1,000 base, because that's the 64 gig. Like, that's expensive.
Yeah, if you add LTE, I think it's like, that's like what, 150 or something like that. It's it used to be like 130, maybe it still is, but I'm thinking 150. But yeah, LTE costs more. The storage upgrades, you know, obviously it can get very pricey. Like, I think you can spend around $1,800 on an iPad alone, which is good. Like, Apple should be doing Mac level tablets in terms of like performance and specs that you can get. It's just obviously the software needs to catch up, and then you know, then we'll feel better about that. I mean, some people can make it work for them, but we can't yet. And I think our like writing jobs are easier. So it's tough. The gigabit LTE stuff, like, as borrowed from the iPhone XS, right? And they have the same funny lines. All of the iPad Pros have, I guess, like the Wi-Fi Bluetooth line is like an arch on the backside that looks like a single eyebrow. Around the camera, goes on the top, and then the LTE ones, the line extends some, so it's like handlebars on a mustache, sort of. It goes around to the screen, and then there's one on the bottom. At least for this gigabit LTE stuff, they have these two additional lines. Like, it goes from the unibrow upward, like a sticking out eyebrow. And there's one in the bottom too. And so on the top and bottom, you've got these lines that come through to the display, like meets the display bezel. And I don't think they're like, I think they're like adjacent to each other, because that's how it works. Just like on the iPhone XS. So the lines this year are not pretty, especially on LTE.
Yeah.
But I guess you get gigabit LTE if you get gigabit LTE where you live. And from what we've seen in the XS world, like, that's not really... I don't know where it is yet. I've not looked into it yet, but I've seen people in large cities say we don't have gigabit LTE yet. It'll be cool when it's there, but, you know, yeah.
You're not buying the OTE one, right?
No. My plan before the event was to buy the biggest, baddest iPad, because I don't buy one every year. And when I buy one, I do use it. And the better it is, like, the more I'll use it. So I thought I'll get the highest storage with LTE. Don't have to pay for the LTE, but, like, I'll have the option. And then I'll use the iPad, like, write it out for, like, you know, another 2 years like I did before, 3 years. I guess it's been almost 3 years. And that's pretty good, like, you know, purchase warranted. But this time, it has a lot of money. So,
I mean, they made it very bigger and badder on the most expensive configuration.
They very much did. So it's like, that's not money well spent for me. Like, if the iPad is your computer, then awesome, that you get some really cool specs this time. But if you also use a Mac or like another computer, then I think that I'm glad that there is an $800 version around, because it's still awesome. But I mean, I am paying for a better design, a bigger screen, some, you know, the ProMotion stuff. And like with the Pencil, I'll be able to do the same stuff with it. It'll just be a better user experience. So in that case, I'm paying for the experience, not like the end result of what you get. But like, I totally plan on like updating my sticker pack, probably making more, doing a lot more drawing. Cause like, I enjoy sketching. I really do, like, as a hobby. And I think that this iPad will make that more enjoyable. And I'm not bummed about not being able to justify the larger screen size. Like, I think the larger screen size is good for video, but 11 inches is still bigger than 9.7. And I think for things like reading books and stuff like that, maybe you don't even want the bigger screen size.
Well, it was interesting because even John Turner's had this line where they're like, and now we've made the iPad Pro so much smaller in volume, we think it's going to be... We think even more people are going to move to that size. They kind of implied that not many people bought it before.
Yeah, and they also had a compare of, like, it's almost the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, like screen to screen. So it's neat. But I think I just couldn't stomach the price of spending $1,200 on the experience at all. so I didn't. But
yeah, I'm gonna wait out for now. Like. The iOS just needs to get better, and then they can justify it more.
Sure. Yeah, it is pretty. It is very impressive hardware.
It's definitely like, pretty. I'll give them that.
It's a big change to the iPad too. Like just like the design, like the not just the screen, but like the rest of it is different. I'm a little bit bummed about the smart connector change because like it used to be on the side, we don't know yet if there'll be like new accessories, you know, from Logitech that work with the smart connector. Maybe they won't even bother this time around. But I am a big fan of the Logitech base. It is a charging stand that uses the three pins of the smart connector to charge iPad. And I never use a cable to charge my iPad. And it's like docked in the stand, landscape orientation. So it's like nice for viewing video and like kind of, you know, poking around and using it. And I just like put it down, clips in, charges. It's my iPad's always fully charged. I never use the cable. And now I won't be able to do that because the smart connector moves. Maybe someone will make a new one, Logitech. I don't know. But yeah, I'll have to start using the wire. It does come with an 18-watt charger, though, the one that was like rumored for iPhone, but it was actually for iPad, and you can't buy separately yet, which was also rumored. So there's that. The fact that it's USB-C, though, is like the same charger. It's like the same behavior as my Mac. I can, you know, plug it in, charge, whatever. So it'll work.
And that was that was almost the end of the event. They baited me in. Tim Cook came back.
Yeah.
I have one last quick update for you. There was a pause. I was like, this is it. Here comes the air power, Matt. Here it comes. No,
no. The fact that he said quick update, I thought it was just going to be the timing. It's like air power, timing.
Yeah, just I think we'll be shipping the air power, Matt, in December.
Bing. December 30th.
You know? Yeah. And it was iOS 12.
Which was announced the day before. Presumably to make room for the event. And like the description in the like the web post said like today, so it was like either meant for to come out on Monday but came out on Tuesday, or that announcement was meant to come out on Tuesday and they changed it. It's like
so air power.
So your theory on air power was that if it was coming this year, they would announce a date at the event, and if it was not coming this year and they totally already plan on saying we need a little more time, you know, early 2019, that they'll tell us, but not at the event because they want to get, you know, all the positive vibes.
Yep.
So now it's probably likely that they're going to come out in a few weeks, into November or so, and say, air power, we need a little more time, early next year.
Yeah, and while we're talking about iOS 12.1, we might as well quickly mention that WatchOS 5.1 came out, and the ECG app is missing in action.
Yeah, it was funny. There was like two publications, one larger than the other, that reported that it was there, I guess based on like pre-writing their coverage, and it was not in any betas, and Apple hasn't really said it'll be in 5.1. It was in some fine print at the event, but that was it. But the fact that it wasn't in the betas or the release notes, like that's irresponsible. And they like backtracked and fixed it, but like it's not there. Presumably there'll be a 5.2 beta soon, and maybe it'll be in beta there, or there'll be a 5.2 update that includes it. But they only said later this year. There's still time. And that update's been very crashy for people, like breaking Apple Watches, and people have to like literally send their Apple Watch off to get replaced. So it's a nice way to get a new Apple Watch, I guess, but not a good experience.
I think if you're waiting for the ECG app, your heart is beating slightly faster.
Yeah. And iOS 1.1, we get the new group FaceTime stuff, which we got to test this week for fun. And it seems
which is good.
Pretty well. I did see situations where I guess the bandwidth was an issue. And you'd see exclamation points and triangles over people's faces. You'd still see them, like blurred out, which looks like a not safe for work filter, like you're blurring out like nudity or something. So it's kind of weird. Yeah, other than that, like it seems to be pretty good. Late, but here it is, shipped. Dual SIM is available for the iPhone XS and XS Max and XR, but no US carrier is supporting it. Like Sprint hasn't said anything. Verizon says later this year, and there's like a whole issue with CDMA. There's AT&T and T-Mobile that said, I think they said that they'd be there, and now they're saying later this year. So
AT&T has delayed it because it doesn't work with visual voicemail.
LOL. Okay.
So. It's a bit of a weird launch. The HomePod technically has an update, but if you're on 12.0, then none of the HomePods can see the 12.1 update. So that's a whole other kettle of fish. That's
and HomePod some issues, automatically, so like it's not common to be on the old version anyway.
Yeah, and the HomePod doesn't have any cable connection, so it's going to be them. it's not confirmed yet, but maybe Apple's going to have to tell people to bring them in, and they're going to have to fix them at the factory or something, because it's not user replaceable.
Hopefully they can do another update that like addresses this somehow, but I don't know. Do we step on 12.0?
It's unclear, but it's not the smoothest of OS releases.
It's also unclear what it's for, but I'm guessing it's related to the workflow or the shortcuts update that helps out with... In the release notes, it mentioned something with AirPlay and HomePod. So, like reliably having the media source come from the HomePod if you do a shortcut from the HomePod using AirPlay. So, and then also there's macOS 10.14.1, which includes all the new emoji and all these other updates and group FaceTime, which is really fun on the Mac because, you know, bigger screen potentially. It works pretty well. And then there's a TVS update that we have no idea what it's about. So didn't break any TVs though. That's good. All in all, you're not buying anything yet, right? Like the prices are kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this like the week before. I was like, on the fence about the iPad stuff, and then when I saw the prices come in, I was like, ooh, I can't do it at the moment. I just can't.
Yeah, luckily I've been like preparing for an iPad update, so it was. I knew I'd spend about what I did. But I thought I'd get a bigger screen for what I was spending.
And you thought you'd probably get more storage on a bigger screen for what you spent.
Yeah. So it was the responsible thing to do, but you know, I just couldn't like close my eyes and click buy on a larger screen. And also like part of it was like sometimes when I have these bigger screens, I wish they were smaller. And do I really want to pay $200 more for a better video experience? And then sometimes wishing this was more portable, even though like loses the bezels, it was just like. Very easy decision to fall back to 11 inches, which is still going to be an upgrade for me. So that's nice. On the Mac side, the Mac Mini, like I was curious about it, but when I priced it out with peripherals, it was not for me. Compared to like, you know, what an iMac can be. I was very disappointed that there was no iMac update at all, like even a processor change. When they showed the space gray Mac Mini, I thought for sure there'd be a space gray iMac. That's not a Pro, but alas, no update to the 12-inch MacBook, MacBook Pro and the Touch Bar, and iMac, which is kind of weird because I believe there's no reason for that. Like the processors are there. It was last June of 2017 when it was updated. That seemed to be a pretty good update cycle of like annually, and then here we are. There's no update, which best case scenario suggests that there's bigger plans for the iMac, which. Maybe, but like the rumor
Hopefully,
is
the design is pretty dated.
Yeah, but the rumor from Quo is that it's just a processor change and a display improvement, which is probably True Tone. So maybe that's like in the spring. Maybe it's just like a release on Apple.com in a few weeks. There was the MacBook Pro change where you can buy an upgraded graphics card.
You can get Radeon Vega Pro graphics in late November.
Yeah, they said next month. We've heard November 14th is when those will be available. So, and that's a change where it's like, I think if you bought a MacBook Pro already, you're probably okay, unless graphics are like your concern. Then it's annoying. But
this is actually quite significant. Is when the new 2018 revisions come out, people were complaining that they couldn't get better spec graphics cards in them.
Okay.
So, and 3 months later, they're now going to offer better spec graphics cards in them. So.
Hmm.
It's addressing customer complaints at least, although if you've already bought one, you're probably feeling a little sour.
Yeah, maybe, but it isn't like if you bought like the base model that now you get a better experience.
They're going to be more expensive, optional upgrades.
And is it 15-inch only?
I don't think they said.
Okay. I saw someone saying 15-inch only, so maybe they were just assuming. Maybe it is. But yeah. Okay. So nothing on AirPods, nothing on AirPower, nothing on the headphones, which was kind of expected. Yeah, I mean, all in all, I was pleased with the event. I've not rewatched it yet. I just watched it like during coverage, but it didn't feel as much like the iPhone event where we both knew what to expect and it was slow paced and like weirdly presented.
Yeah.
I feel like this one was very like quick paced. Like, a lot of it was like they're rushing, and it wasn't quite 2 hours either. I think it was shorter than that.
It was definitely much better than the iPhone event. They had some nice new presenters, which was cool to see some new faces. We saw, you know, Phil was in a video narration, but he wasn't on stage at all. It was just Tim and then the new people. So it was really cool to see. The presentation was pretty slick. I think the Mini is good for the people that it's aimed at, but I think that's even a smaller slice of the people that bought it before. The MacBook Air is a great option, but it doesn't fix the problems with the line, as we said earlier, and the iPad Pro is really, really pretty, but also slightly too expensive, so
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, next week I will have the 11-inch iPad Pro here, and the Apple Pencil second generation here, and the keyboard folio case to talk about. So I'll have I think we're going to record next Thursday, so that we'll have one day for me to get to use that and experience it. So looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to like updating my sticker packs and making new ones and sketching more, and
hopefully a 12.2 Beta, 5.2 Betas.
Yeah, that should be coming around the corner too. So with that being said, great event. Really happy with it. That's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We will be back next week. In the meantime, you can give us feedback at happyhour@9to5mac.com over email, or you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMAA.
All right. We'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye.